NHPR.org. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. All year, we've been hearing that 2013 will be the year of the comet, and for good reason. A large, impressive, fuzzy-tailed comet hasn't been seen in these parts since Hale-Bopp in 1997. The comet Pan-STARRS graced the skies above Earth this March and was seen in the Northern Hemisphere. But the star-crazed among us are really looking forward to early December, when the comet Ison will deliver what some call a once-in-a-lifetime performance. There's a catch, though. The show is all contingent upon Ison's voyage around the sun, a dangerous trip for any comet. But if it survives this U-turn on Thanksgiving Day and gravity whips it back into space, it will pass by Earth in early December and may be so bright we'll be able to see its long tail with the naked eye even during the day. But Ison's arrival isn't the only out-of-this-world event happening right now in space. In September, scientists confirmed that the Voyager 1 spacecraft has officially left our solar system. Meanwhile, closer to home, two missions to Mars, one from India, one from the U.S., aim to explore the red planet's atmosphere. And here on Earth is a new iPhone app to let you know when a spy satellite might be flying overhead. Today in The Exchange, it's an astronomy update, and we want to hear your questions and thoughts as well. Give us a call, the Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Our sky guys are John Gianforte, co-founder of the Astronomical Society of Northern New England and astronomy instructor for Granite State College and UNH. And John, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Laura.
Also with us, Mal Cameron, former astronomy and space educator at the McAuliffe Shepard Discovery Center. And Mal, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Great to be here, Laura.
Well, let's talk about the comet of the century, the year of the comet. We talked a little bit about this last time, guys, but Mal, to you first. Last time we talked, there was a lot of uncertainty about where it might end up, what we here in New England might be able to see. What do we know now, Mal? What's sort of the hype at this point about the comet?
Well, it's still up in the air. Literally.
Literally, right.
I didn't mean for it to come out quite that way. But there's still a lot of controversy about how it's going to last. What's happening is the comet will be coming in, if you think about the right-hand side of the sun, and when you see it in the sky, it comes in from that area, and it's going to whip around the sun and then head back out into space. The point is that it's going to come very close to the surface of the sun. The distance at its closest approach is less than one sun's radius distance from the sun. So it's going to be getting a lot of gravitational action pulling on it. So a lot of scientists are saying, well, it's going to perhaps break apart and it will not be a comet of any century.
Or get sucked up by the sun, right? Or
well, I don't know if it'll get sucked up because its momentum and its trajectory is such so that it will still whip around. But it could get enough gravitational pull from the sun that theoretically, at least, it could break into different pieces.
I see.
But a lot of prognosis I've been able to read lately, there are people who are very encouraged as it gets closer and they're able to study it, that we have, with fingers crossed, we're hoping that it will survive intact. And if it does survive intact, it can turn into this wonderful, let's see it in the daytime type comet, too, which would be really good.
So, John, are Vegas bet makers or bookmakers laying bets on this thing? Yes, we'll see it. No, we won't. What's going on?
Well, we'll definitely see it. I don't want to put too much faith on it being visible in the daytime. We always hope for the best when comets enter the solar system for the first time. So it's a bright comet. It's not a great big comet right now because it's still pretty far from the sun. It's just inside Mars's orbit. So it's still cold out there. But as the comet, every day the comet gets a little closer to the sun and therefore heats up a little bit more. And as it does that, it liberates more vapors, that melt at low temperatures, and it's getting warmer and warmer.
Because comets are basically dirt and ice, right? So the warmer they get, the smaller they get.
Exactly. But so far, the only things that have been liberated are very volatile materials, like cyanogen gas, which is a poisonous gas, carbon dioxide gas. As the comet makes its last little, you know, month and a half, 6 weeks into its closest approach, now water vapor starts to sublimate. It goes directly from water ice to a gas. And when the sunlight reflects off that, we can really see a bright comet, a long tail, which we're hoping for. But we don't know yet. Comet is visible in the morning sky, very close to the bright star Regulus, not to the naked eye. It's still quite a bit dimmer than the naked eye can see. You need binoculars to see it.
Now, that's what I wanted to ask you, John, because before we got on the air, we were talking about the comet, and you said, I've seen it. And I thought, is he joking or not? You're not joking.
No. It's passing through the constellation Leo.
You can see it now?
Yes. It's in front of the constellation Leo. Of course, it's a solar system object, so it's relatively close, on its way into the inner solar system, which astronomers believe for the first time. So when a comet enters the solar system for the first time, we don't know anything about it. We don't know its history. We have no past observations to go by. And with its close approach to the sun on the 28th of November, Thanksgiving Day, as Mel mentioned, we don't know what's going to happen. It could be gravitationally disrupted, that is, break up into pieces, and that would spell the end of the comet, but that exposes new cometary material to the radiation of the sun, which could make it brighter for a short time. So we're really not sure what to expect.
But lots of uncertainties then.
Lots of uncertainties because it's a newcomer to the solar system and we don't have much experience.
Right.
But if it holds together around its closest approach to the sun, for the first and second week or third week of December, will be first visible in the morning sky before the sun rises. It could be very prominent then. And then later in December, we'll be able to catch it in the evening sky as the sun sets.
So, John, you've been able to see it with your telescope or with binoculars?
With binoculars.
Wow. How about you, Mal?
Right. I haven't been brave enough to get up in the morning to look at it. But you do have to get up about, about an hour, I guess, before sunrise. And now the sun rises a lot later. So that some people may actually, like yourself, perhaps, might be up that early in the morning. Around, say, 4:30, 5 o'clock is probably okay. The moon has been very bright in recent days, or mornings, so I haven't attempted to go out. But if you go up and find, if you're familiar with the constellation of Leo the Lion, there's a famous asterism that looks like a backwards question mark of stars. And the dot at the bottom of that question mark is the star Regulus. And just to the, as it rises, just to the left of that, to the upper left a little bit, is the planet Mars itself. And if you continue along that line, kind of a bumpy, crooked line, you will be able to take a pair of binoculars and look out there and should be able to find
that
comet.
What's a bumpy, crooked line?
Bumpy,
crooked. Let me write that one down.
Yes, bumpy, crooked. Okay.
Let me invite our listeners to join us. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Join us. We've got our sky guys here. And if you have questions about the so-called comet of the century, they can probably answer them. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We're talking, of course, about the comet Ison, which is supposedly, maybe, going to put on a terrific show at the end of the year. Later on, we'll look at two new missions to Mars, one from India, one from the U.S. And we'll also talk about the trusted old explorer Voyager finally leaving the outer reaches of our solar system. Questions, comments on these topics and more, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Mal, I did want to ask you real quick. Government shutdown's over. Everybody knows that. It ended early last week. How did this affect anything at NASA? Ongoing missions, launches, probes, et cetera?
Well, the best part of it is that all the missions that required critical attention were taken care of. And in some cases, I even read that a lot of the NASA employees came in and gave their own time just to make sure that things were going on time. For example, there was a mission that looped around the Earth that's on its way to Jupiter, actually, which is kind of weird, but seems like it's coming back from Jupiter. But that had to be watched because it was doing what's called a gravity assist as it flew around the Earth to gain momentum to head back toward Jupiter. And somebody had to watch that. And so it's the mission called Juno. It won't be arriving at Jupiter till 2016, but yet somebody had to be at the controls to monitor it and make sure that it was coming in at the right trajectory and so on and succeeding, which it did. But that was during the shutdown, and there were other missions involved, too. There was another one coming up we may talk about later called MAVEN that's going to launch to Mars. And that was almost scrubbed if this had not been solved.
Really? Now, is that because it was calculated or planned to take off on a certain day when Earth was in a position and Mars was in a position? And if you bump it ahead, you're all off. All your mathematical calculations are off.
To jump ahead to that mission, there's like a 20-day window that opens on the 18th of November. And if they had missed that day, they would have had some other days. But had it been prolonged, it could have said, okay, we can't launch until the alignment of Earth and Mars is such that we can launch. And that could put it off a couple of years.
I see. So if you miss that window,
Yeah. Right.
Can't turn back the orbits of the planets.
They keep going. They don't stop for the shutdown.
They don't stop for the shutdown. They don't care about money. They just keep on moving. And there's a lot of preparations that have to take place before a mission even gets close to launching. And that's what the shutdown threatened. It threatened all those pre-launch preparations that are essential to take place. And if they don't, then the mission can't launch on time.
I have one more question real quick to you, John, about a mission, another mission to Mars, in addition to MAVEN that both you and Mal have mentioned. India is also launching a mission to Mars. How big a deal is this, John?
This is a huge deal. It's a huge deal for the Indian Science Agency. The mission's called MOM, Mars Orbital Mission. And its mission is to look for the gas methane, which has always been a puzzle on the red planet because there have been spotty appearances of methane gas, which could imply biologic activity beneath the surface of Mars, or it could mean that there is some kind of geologic processes taking place beneath Mars that could be sources of methane.
And just politically, John, right? I mean, this sort of makes India more of a player on the world stage in terms of science and so forth. It's a big deal for them.
It's a huge deal for them. They're to be congratulated for getting this far. It's supposed to launch later this month. I think the 28th is their targeted launch date. So this is a mission to watch. Very, very exciting.
All right. Well, and I have to say the name is warm and fuzzy, MOM. So we'll talk more after a super short break. I want to check in now, though, with NHPR's fall membership drive.
And good morning. I'm Sarah Ashworth, and we're asking for your financial support now. NHPR members support programs like The Exchange, and you make it possible when you give to NHPR at nhpr.org or by calling 1-888-805-6477. And joining me this morning is Keith Shields.
And Sarah, we have a new hourly goal, $2,500 in the next 40 minutes. What part can you help out with? Maybe $5 a month or $10 a month or maybe even $20 a month on our sustaining plan. It's up to you. Just put your value on The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio and give now at 1-888-805-6477. You can help us stay on track as well on our safe and secure website, which is nhpr.org.
And The Exchange covers topics as diverse as our listeners. Today is a really good example, our astronomy show. You also heard our summer book show in the past couple of months. We also cover things like the politics and the economy, education and healthcare. Those are all topics that Laura dives into. She shares your curiosity about the world, and every day she asks you to share your curiosity with her because she knows hers aren't the only questions that matter. Your calls, your insight, your experiences only serve to enrich the show, and your financial support helps to make The Exchange possible. Donate now. Call 1-888-805-6477 or give online at nhpr.org.
Great news, Sarah. Already some major progress here. $2,000 now to go in the next 39 minutes. The Exchange listeners, they're so awesome. I know I'm a little prejudiced here, but
why would that be?
But if you haven't supported us yet, how about $10 a month as a sustainer? And we will thank thank you with one of our brand new NHPR thank you gifts. It's our Clean Canteen Thermos. It's 20 ounces, double-walled, vacuum-insulated. Does a great job at keeping your hot drinks hot and your icy drinks icy cold. And it has the NHPR logo on it, so you can show off your NHPR pride and get refreshed at the same time. $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120 when you give us a call, 1-888-805-6477. Or you can see a picture of the Clean Canteen when you make a pledge on our website, nhpr.org.
Keith, as executive producer of The Exchange, knows Exchange listeners well. He knows that your support makes a difference. Listener support makes up just over 41% of the total revenue for NHPR. So getting more members, just 1 or 2% more of the audience, it makes a huge difference in our ability to serve you even better. Call now, 1-888-805-6477, or take a couple of minutes, go online, make your pledge at nhpr.org.
I also know Exchange listeners lead busy lives. So if you haven't supported New Hampshire Public Radio, let me tell you, it's very quick and easy. All you have to do is give your contact information, whether you want to use a bank account or a credit card, how much you want to give as a sustainer, maybe $10 a month, maybe $25 a month, and you're pretty much done. It's pretty much just takes about 2 minutes of your time. So support us right now. You won't miss 1 minute of The Exchange and the Astronomy Guys, 1-888-805-6477, or online, nhpr.org.
And think about why you listen to NHPR. Is it because each day you learn something you didn't know the day before, or because you rely on public radio to help fill in the gaps in your knowledge? We understand that you trust us to explore important nuances of stories so you can better understand them. We also share your passion for learning. That's why we're here every day bringing you these stories and interviews, and it's what drives us every day. And your donation helps it all happen and helps NHPR thrive. You can make a donation now and help us thrive at nhpr.org, or you can call 1-888-805-6477.
$2,000 to go to make our goal. If you can do $20 a month as a sustainer, we'll thank you with the Blue Nano brand new Bluetooth speaker. It can be used with any Bluetooth enabled device. It's easy to use. It has a big speaker, and it's only the size of a golf ball. So that's $20 a month as a sustainer, 1-888-805-6477.
And we have callers on the line now, and just $2,000 left to raise this hour. Exchange listeners can help us pull through and meet that goal. It's so important to meet these hourly goals so we stay on track for the entire drive. Make your pledge now, 1-888-805-6477, or at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Grupponi Automotive Group, providing 6 auto lines, including Ford, Toyota, and Honda, in a relaxed, stress-free environment. Driven to Amaze and Bowen online at grupponi.com. From Hillsboro House, a locally owned nursing facility, improving the experience and delivery of rehab and residential care for over 50 years. Information at hillsborohouse.org. And the League of New Hampshire Craftsman Retail Galleries in Concord, Hanover, Littleton, Meredith, Nashua, and North Conway. Information at nhcrafts.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, an update on the many recent discoveries in outer space, including the possible coming of the comet Ison, what some call the comet of the century. We've been talking about that and some other recent missions to Mars. Join us with your questions and comments. Our Sky Guys are here. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And gentlemen, we have an email here from Chris in Concord who says, your guest mentioned the possibility of the comet, that's the comet Ison we talked about earlier, breaking up when circling the sun. Is there any chance, Chris asks, that fragments of the comet could hit the Earth? Mal?
No.
No. Why is that?
Because whatever, if it does break up, it'll be still following the same orbital trajectory, and all the pieces will essentially stay in that same orbit, and that orbit will not come anywhere near the Earth. There's been a precedent for this that we discovered back in 1992, I believe it was, or 94. There was a comet that actually hit the planet Jupiter, and we got pictures of it, you know, with the Hubble Space Telescope and so on. But what it had done, and it had gone through the atmosphere, and Jupiter, being the largest planet, also had enough gravitational pull to tear this comet apart. It was called the Shoemaker-Levy comet.
I remember that, actually.
And
yes.
It broke it up into just a whole lineup, single-file lineup, if you will, of comet particles, maybe up to a couple of dozen, I think, John, something like
21.
That. 21. That's very good.
It's amazing that you can measure that.
But then it changed.
Far away.
What it did was it changed its trajectory enough so the next time that this comet chain of necklace, if you will, of particles came through, they came all in a row, all lined up in the same trajectory, but happened to hit the planet. That's not going to happen here.
Okay, and that's really interesting. And we need to go back to our listeners, but I did want to ask you real quick, John. It amazes me that you knew exactly how many particles it broke up into.
It was a huge deal. It was a week-long period in July, from the 15th to the 21st of July, 1994. And I just...
He knows the date.
Well, I remember where I was because it was cloudy. And I had to drive 8 hours to get to a clear spot. And with an 8-inch telescope, you could see the impact scars that the largest piece of the comet, which was 2 kilometers in diameter, caused in Jupiter's atmosphere.
Wow, you could see it.
So over a period of 6 days, you could see a series of impact scars in the southern hemisphere of Jupiter. It was really amazing.
Wow. And by the way, if you want to see something astronomically fun and interesting, we have posted pictures of Mal and John's space ties that they always wear when they come on this program, our Sky Guys. They always wear a really cool space tie. So if you want to go to our website, nhpr.org, you can check out their ties.
That's why we had to take off our ties this morning when we came in.
Go ahead, Mal, and then we've got some calls.
Just wanted to mention, John mentioned the largest chunk of the comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 that hit Jupiter was about 2 kilometers. That's about the size of comet Ison is the estimate. But that's not going to happen to us. So hopefully all of that will make it out there too.
Well, Chris, thanks a lot for the email. It generated a lot of discussion and some things that I had forgotten about. So thank you. You can email us as well, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange. And let's go to the phones now, gentlemen. And Ken's waiting in Antrim. Hi, Ken, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I just want to know if what you guys are doing about the near-Earth objects that we've been encountering, like last year's Russian meteorite that struck.
Oh, right. I remember that, Ken. Thank you for calling in. We talked about that on this program, John. He's absolutely right.
Ken, that's Mal's job. He's supposed to.
You're supposed to back me up and
no,
help
no.
Me.
You're supposed to make sure that the inner solar system is swept completely free of these things. but actually,
but just remind us of what happened in Russia last year, because that was interesting.
On the 15th of February of this year, we were expecting an asteroid to fly by the Earth at a distance of only 17,000 miles, which is underneath geosynchronous satellites. Those are satellites that orbit about 25,000 miles from the Earth. And it enables them to hover over the same place for weather and TV and radio signals transmission. So this object that we knew about wasn't going to hit the Earth. There was no danger, no fear about that happening. Everyone was excited about getting close images and radar pictures of its surface and counting craters and all that kind of thing, which was expected. And that happened. But earlier that day, there was an unexpected asteroid flyby.
On that same day?
On that same day, about 9 o'clock in the morning, Russia time, this small asteroid, about 3 times smaller than the one that was supposed to fly by later that day, exploded over Russia, a city in Russia. And the shockwave, this is about 25 kilometers above the ground that this explosion occurred. And the shockwave traveling to the Earth destroyed buildings, knocked down old buildings, even buildings that were being constructed. Glass broke, concrete walls fell down, and thousands of people were injured, mostly due to falling building materials.
Yeah.
So, but it was captured on live video on the dashboard video cameras that a lot of Russian motorists have in their cars for another reason. But it really gave us live footage. But this was completely unexpected and coincidental. The two objects were on completely different trajectories. They weren't related in any way, shape, or form. But it points out that the near-Earth objects that you're referring to, or PHAs, as NASA likes to call them, potentially hazardous asteroids, of which there are more than 1,000 of them, that could come within 3 or 4 million miles of the Earth and are more than about 100 meters in diameter.
PHAs.
Yes.
I haven't heard that before. So that's a great reminder of what happened last year. So, Mal, to Ken's point, though, I mean, is anybody, I mean, I'm assuming NASA's keeping an eye out for these things. You know, there was that movie a while back about the team that went and blew up the asteroid because it was going to hit Earth. So I can't remember, was Bruce Willis or somebody went to the asteroid and blew it up. And
it's Bruce Willis who's taking care of everything.
But in all seriousness, I mean, is anybody watching out for these things, A? And B, if something is coming close, are they going to, you know, upset its orbit so it doesn't hit us or what?
It's a pretty tricky situation. Yes, they are tracking things, but obviously what happened earlier that John just described, some of them get missed. We never saw that one coming at all. But it was smaller than the one that flew past us. But they do try to track as many objects as they can. There are people tracking them all the time. But then the real catch is, what do you do if we do find one?
Right.
And do we have enough of a long-term, several decades before it's going to hit us that we can make plans and figure out how to do it? My understanding is we really don't know how to do it, at least for sure. So we have ideas. There are many ideas. One of them is just to get out there and kind of get up to it and try to push it away. Or we've had ideas of using nuclear weapons to put it on one side and cause an explosion or some sort of explosion to push it away and propel it away. But then again, if you explode it, then you got several pieces you have to worry about.
Right. Several radioactive pieces.
Yeah. Radioactive pieces, sure.
Smaller, but still.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So, well, go ahead, Mal.
You know, it is normal. We know that things do hit the Earth, surprisingly so, but statistically, it's rare that something will hit the Earth. But we do know a lot of smaller pieces come. I mean, we have a lot of meteorites that come from space that are essentially harmless. Most of them fall into the ocean because the Earth is mostly water. And we have never found a meteorite in New Hampshire so far.
John, real quick?
Yes. If people are interested in looking at what scientists are doing about these PHAs, these potentially hazardous asteroids, you can check out the website called www.spaceweather.com. At the bottom of the page, you'll see a chart that lists how many of these PHAs there are, when the next encounter will be. The ones that have pink highlighted are the ones that come pretty close to the Earth, and it gives their size, too.
All right. Ken, great question. Thank you very much for calling in. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Guys, I want to ask you about another mission that made it past a huge milestone recently. And, Mal, it's one that we've talked about before, but Voyager just exited the bubble of our solar system. Now, just remind us what that mission is all about and why this is so important.
Well, it goes back to the sun, and John will correct me on this, I'm sure, but the sun sends out particles called...
No, that's not right, Mal.
Okay. Give me a chance here. It has I forgot my train of thought here. Yes, but the sun has these particles coming out. They're basically ions and things coming from the sun. We call it the solar wind. And one way to picture this is it's pushing it out with a lot of pressure into space. And this pressure bubble, if you will, of material that's going in all different directions goes out way beyond the edge of the solar system, past Pluto and way out there beyond what's called the Kuiper Belt and
so on. The far, far reaches of our solar system.
But at some point, it's going to meet up with the similar particles coming from the other stars, what's called the interstellar medium that's coming toward us. Those two smash together, and it changes the direction of those particles as they smash together. Instead of coming toward each other, they hit each other and start going 90 degrees away. So instead of going straight ahead, they're going left or right. And that is what we consider the edge of this bubble that Voyager ran into. Voyager was launched in 1970s, late 70s, and it's still going. It's still
sending back information.
The signal from Voyager, I mean, most of the instruments have been shut down. There's no camera work being done or anything, but it's just picking up more from its magnetometer readings, all these particles and what direction they're going. And what happened is it's kind of like you're traveling, trying to travel across Route 93 during rush hour traffic, and you have to go from one side of the highway to the other, and you're one of those particles. But then the other particles, the cars in this case, are going to your left and right, and you got to try to get through that. But your magnetometer picks up the fact that suddenly these particles have changed direction, and that's telling NASA, we have crossed this highway. We are going to the other edge of this bubble. Turns out that by the time they realized this, they figured out that it actually happened in August of 2012.
So it takes that long for the data to get back to
Earth? Well, no, it
isn't
that. It's just that they wanted to verify that what they were reading was correct.
Sure.
The bubble doesn't maintain the same size, right? As the solar wind emanating from the sun ebbs and flows, the bubble expands and contracts. So it's kind of like a moving target that Voyager keeps passing through. But at this point, as Mal said, now it's clear that it has exited the solar system proper, and it saw the change in direction and polarity of the magnetic field the magnetic field of the particles that it was studying. It changed definitively some time ago.
So does it now enter other solar systems, John?
Well, no, there's no nearby solar systems. It's basically empty space until you get to another star, which it's not even headed near.
Wow. And what amazes me, too, about this, I mean, there's so many things that amaze me about this, but the other thing is, John, that it's still going. I mean, Mal said it was launched in the 70s.
That's right. It's a true testament to the people working the mission. The same principal investigators are involved. This mission was launched in 1977,
Wow. And
it's still working.
All right. Well,
just to give you an idea of the amount of signal that's coming from Voyager, when it's picked up on Earth, it's equivalent to about a billionth of 1 watt of power.
So not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot.
But still worthy.
It's literally a whisper from space.
All right. Well, a lot more comments, questions from you, and a lot more questions for our guests after a short break. We're going to check in now with NHPR's Fall Membership Drive.
And the work of Laura Kanoi and the Exchange is only made possible with listener support. I'm Keith Shields, executive producer of the show you're just listening to, and this is NHPR's Fall Fund Drive. So please give as generously as you can to keep these stories, these shows, these interviews on the air. It only takes about 2 minutes of your time at nhpr.org or call us at 1-888-805-6477. And joining me today is NHPR's news director, Sarah Ashworth.
And the goal here is to raise $1,800 in the next 20 minutes or so. We have just $1,800 left to raise. You can help us meet this important goal by giving now at 1-888-805-6477. Your financial support ensures that the programs you enjoy, just like The Exchange and the news you trust, will be here every day on NHPR. You can also give online at nhpr.org.
And here at NHPR, we know it's important for people in different parts of the state to hear the stories of those in other parts of the state. And that's why on The Exchange, we try to find those uniquely New Hampshire stories that reflect our culture and tackle the policy issues that have an effect on us. A good case in point is the show we did recently. It was really popular, Sarah, on the Bearcat in Concord. It had to do with one community, but it brings up issues that other people in Keene and Berlin and Portsmouth can think of. So support The Exchange, 1-888-8888. 805-6477. Support the conversations around the state at nhpr.org.
And we have just $1,400 left to raise in the next 20 minutes or so. Two people are on the web right now making pledges. If you can do that too, if you're near your computer or phone, go to nhpr.org and make your pledge there. Exchange listeners are on the line coming through. If you pledge at the $10 a month level, as a sustaining member, we will send you the NHPR Clean Canteen. It's one of our newest thank you gifts this fund drive. It's a 20-ounce stainless steel thermos. It's double-walled vacuum insulation. That means it keeps your hot drinks really hot and your cold drinks really cold for about 24 hours. It also features the NHPR logo on the side. It says, listen, support, sustain NHPR. So whether you take it into the office or take it out on the trails, you can show how much you support NHPR. And we now just have $1,100 left to raise by 10 o'clock today. We can do that. Make your pledge at nhpr.org. Three people are on the web right now, or you can call 1-888-805-6477.
That's what it's all about, Sarah. In a world where headlines are affected by bottom lines, we're so glad that we can remain non-commercial and dependent on you, the listener, as the most important source of income. So every contribution, every dollar, it really does make a difference. So support us right now, Exchange listeners. You call in every day to hear your opinions, to get your questions, to really enhance the show. Now we're just asking you to enhance it in a different way by calling and supporting that program. 1-888-805-6477 or online, nhpr.org.
And you are not the procrastinating type, so don't put off giving until later. It's Monday morning. Start your week off right. It really does take just 2 minutes of your time. Please take those 2 minutes now and get it done with. Then it won't be hanging over your head every time you hear us asking for money. You can make a difference right now. Make your pledge by calling 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org.
Let me ask you this. Do you remember the first time you heard public radio, or has it been the backdrop of your life? You know, Sarah, some of my students that I've taught and interns that I have, they tell me how their parents listened to public radio, and then all of a sudden they started listening when they had their cars. We have a name for that. They're called backseat listeners. So if your parents have supported public radio in the past, maybe it's time for you to step up now that you're listening on your own. Support us right now at 1-888-805-6477 or make a contribution on our website, which is nhpr.org.
And if you can make a contribution at the $5 a month level, we will send you the NHPR Chico Market Bag. This is a lightweight, foldable little red bag with the NHPR logo on it. It's yours when you become a sustaining member at the $5 a month level. You can do that by calling 1-888-805-6477.
$1,100 to go in the next 16, 17 minutes. So call us right now at 1-888-805-6477. Or you can make a contribution on our website and check out our thank you gifts there as well, which is nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Wealth Management Group at Merrimack County Savings Bank. Trust and wealth management services provided by advisors committed to your financial needs, themerrimack.com. And Sulloway and Hollis, providing effective representation for estate planning, domestic relations, and family-owned business throughout New Hampshire. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Hedrick Smith on his new book, Who Stole the American Dream? That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, our Sky Guys are with us, giving us an update on all that's been happening in space science lately, missions to Mars, the comet of the century, and Voyager finally leaving the outer reaches of our solar system. Join us with your comments and questions at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, we would be remiss if we did not, during this hour, remember Scott Carpenter, Mal Cameron. He passed away earlier this month. Just remind us of his contributions.
Yeah, Scott Carpenter was one of the original seven astronauts. And I always think that's back in the days where I think everybody in the country knew the names of the astronauts, all of the astronauts. There were seven at the time. And today, of course, there are so many there that we have to read in the paper, oh, that's an astronaut. Oh, okay. But there was the glory days of the Mercury Redstone thing. Of course, here in Concord, there's the Discovery Center with the Redstone rocket out front that Alan Shepard. It's a replica of the actual size of the rocket that Alan Shepard flew when he was doing his little bump into space. And we all know of John Glenn, who was the first American to orbit the Earth. Well, Scott Carpenter was the second American to orbit the Earth. And he was the backup pilot for John Glenn.
Oh, I see.
For his flight.
He died at age...
But he died at age 88 on October the 10th. And he also had two titles. He was an astronaut, but he was also known as an aquanaut because he did some living underwater. He had a program called SEAL Lab 2 that he participated in and off of California, and he was underwater for 45 days, living underwater with
wow.
a crew, and just to see what it was like and see if they could survive.
Clearly someone who didn't have claustrophobia, being underwater
Absolutely.
For that long.
Well, you didn't want to have claustrophobia riding on a Mercury capsule
True.
Either.
True, absolutely. Wow. Well, rest in peace, Scott Carpenter.
Yes. That's 88. That's... He'll be missed. And John and I were talking about this earlier, and turns out there's only one of the original seven that are still left, and that's John Glenn.
All right. Well, I did want to ask you, John, you know, you're a big stargazer, as we heard earlier, already seen that comet that people are waiting for. As the temperatures get cooler, it does take a little more commitment to stay outside and stargaze at night. But from what I understand from you, John, it's going to be worth it these next couple months. So bundle up and get out there.
I wholeheartedly agree. It's a great time of the day after dark for a nice nature walk of a different kind. You'll see Venus in the evening sky in the western sky.
Which is supposed to be quite dazzling.
Very, very bright. Looks like as bright as a plane with its landing lights on.
Wow.
Very low in the western horizon just after the sun sets. And if you happen to get up in the middle of the night after 2 or 3 o'clock, high in the sky, you'll see a very, very white, yellowish, dazzlingly yellowish object, and that's the planet Jupiter. And then later, about an hour and a half later, also in the east, you'll see an orange object, orangish bright star-like object, which is the planet Mars, which is very close to the star Regulus in Leo that Mal mentioned earlier. So those are like a double star really close together from viewed with the naked eye. Regulus is bright whitish blue, and Mars is distinctly orange. So it's a great color contrast to the naked eye or in binoculars.
Wow, and so that's a treat, John. But from what I understand, the Orionid meteor showers aren't going to be that great this
year. They're a good shower, a good performing shower most years. But this year, the moonlight has dampened our ability to see all but the very brightest Orionid meteors.
A couple more things I wanted to ask both of you about. And Mal, to you, two recent developments to make us savvier sky watchers. One is an app that tells us if a spy satellite is going overhead. What's going on there?
For those of you who are paranoid about being spied upon, yes, there is an app that's come out called Spy Me Sat. And just SPYMESAT. And it was developed by a company down in Greenbelt, Maryland, which is where Goddard Space Flight Center is located. And the idea is that you could put this app on your iPhone or whatever smartphone you have, and you can monitor every time a spy satellite goes overhead. And so if you want to hide somewhere, you can run and say, oh, no, they're spying on me now.
So, when did this come out, Mal?
It's very recent, and the blurb I brought with me, it says, in case you're hungry for personal space situational awareness or just plain paranoid, this app can help you.
Are you sure you should be talking about this?
I don't know. Well, I don't. Can they see through this building?
I think we're safe.
There's a man with a black tie at the door.
Okay.
Another development that I wanted to ask you about, John, again, to kind of help us out here, is the New Hampshire Astronomical Society is doing kind of a library loan program where you can borrow a telescope instead of a book. That's cool. I mean, how does that work?
Oh, it's a wonderful program that the New Hampshire Astronomical Society, K came up with on its own. A person by the name of Mark Stobridge is the originator of this idea. And they gave away two telescopes in 2008 when the program began.
Gave away meaning you got to give them back like a library book or
no,
just
they,
gave
they,
away?
They gave them to two New Hampshire libraries.
Yeah.
It escapes me which library they started with. But today they have either sponsored or saw to it that 81 libraries in New Hampshire have telescopes. And the telescopes that they have standardized on are 4.5-inch reflecting telescopes. It's a design that was designed by Isaac Newton. And it's a tabletop telescope, a very sturdy telescope that the New Hampshire Astronomical Society actually purchases or gets donated, all the same model. So, and they write an instruction book for people who aren't astronomers, so it's easy to use. They make modifications to the telescope to make them easier to use and tamper-proof, so you can't do anything inadvertently with the telescope to make it inoperative. And it's a wonderful, wonderful program that is being duplicated and copied in many states, even in other countries. It's a tremendous
success. So New Hampshire's the first.
New Hampshire's the first. The New Hampshire Astronomical Society was awarded the Astronomy Magazine a WOW Outreach Award of some $2,500, which they're going to use to see to it that more libraries get telescopes. So
wow.
It's a wonderful program. You can go in and borrow a telescope just like you can borrow a book, and there's usually a waiting list to borrow the scopes.
Real interesting. Pick up a couple books and a telescope at the same time.
Absolutely. I gave one to my home library.
Great. All right. Well, one more question for both of you. And I'm going to start with you, John, but Mal, I definitely want to hear from you, too. John, we always do this with you when we catch up. The extrasolar planet count. Now, extrasolar planets means planets that we have detected in other solar systems. So extrasolar, outside our solar system. Is that right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And what's the count at now?
Well, I'm going to let Mal cover that. It's about to hit a milestone number,
yes.
and we've been talking about this a lot. So I'm going to let Mal say the number, but it's a number that changes weekly, several times a week, and it's about to break.
It's right on the cusp. It may have happened while we were doing the show.
That's very,
we
very
hope
possible.
It did.
Very possible.
Because when we started, the first one of these was discovered back in the mid-90s, 95, I think, or 6. And the first confirmation of a planet orbiting around another star. And now that count has been mounting greatly, thanks in part to a program called Kepler, the Kepler system. But the count as of this morning before we came in to do the show was 999 extrasolar planets. So we're waiting to hit that 1,000 mark, that 1,000.
He finally said 1,000. Thank you, man.
1,000 is what we're looking for, which is very profound because what does that mean for us here on Earth? We're thinking that, okay, suddenly we have confirmation that there are definitely planets orbiting around other stars, not just us around our sun, which, of course, increases the potential that not only are there planets, but there would be planets with life on them and intelligent life and a whole big...
The big question
big
that people have asked forever,
right.
Are we alone?
Are we alone?
And the fact that there's 1,000 extrasolar planets
right.
out there.
Increases the chance.
Well, there are so many of them. I'll tell you, that we know that there's 999 confirmed today. Those 999 exist in 759 different systems, and 169 of those systems are multiple planetary systems where there's more than one planet orbiting right. the parent star. So think about that.
All right. Guys, this has been great. Thank you so much for being here. And next time we talk, we probably will have passed that 1,000 mark. So we'll have more to talk about. Mal Cameron, it's great to see you. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Laura.
John Gianforte, thank you so much.
The same here, Laura.
Our Sky Guys, Mal Cameron and John Gianforte. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Checking in now very quickly with that fall membership drive.
Great job, as always, Laura. I'm Keith Shields, executive producer for The Exchange, and this is NHPR's Fall Fund Drive. So please give as generously as you can to keep your favorite programs like The Exchange on the air. It only takes 2 minutes, so give right now at nhpr.org or give us a call at 1-800-875-5433. 1-888-805-6477. And joining me today is NHPR's news director, Sarah Ashworth.
And we have $900 to raise in the next 5 minutes to stay on track this hour by calling 1-888-805-6477. Right now, you help us pay for the exchange. Online contributions count towards the goal as well. You can make those at nhpr.org. It's easy and it takes just a couple of minutes, and it truly does make a difference.
And shows like The Sky Guys, it's a great example of the kind of story that you only really hear on New Hampshire Public Radio. Sarah, I get to do a lot of the pre-interviews with John and Mal, and what I love about them is they take these complicated issues and present them in a way that dummies like myself can understand. And I always walk away feeling so much smarter when I hear a show like this. So the Fun Drive, it's your chance to help bring those conversations to you in the future, along with the ones about public policy and education and politics and the economy. Support right now at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And if you can support us at the $10 a month level as a sustaining member, we will send you NHPR's one of our newest thank you gifts. It's the NHPR Clean Canteen. It's a 20-ounce stainless steel thermos. It's double-walled. It's vacuum insulated. It's going to keep your hot drinks hot, your cold drinks cold. It has the NHPR logo on it. In fact, it says listen, support, sustain NHPR. So when you're out on the trail, or if you take your thermos into work every day, you can show that you support and you listen to NHPR. Become a sustaining member at that $10 a month level, and that canteen is yours. Call 1-888-805-6477 or give online at nhpr.org.
And you're supporting the exchange. And what I always tell people is that the exchange is the one place during the NHPR day that New Hampshire people can talk about New Hampshire issues. Those stories that you might have heard on Morning Edition with the reporters that Sarah works with. And I always say it's the callers that make a good show into a great show because they provide those questions we might not have thought of or those perspectives, or they're the one that challenges our guests. So support us right now. We're asking you to call in a different way to support that conversation. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call, or you can support us online, nhpr.org.
And it's really easy to support us online. It takes just a couple of minutes of your time. We need your name, your contact information, which of course we keep private. You can become a sustaining member using your credit card or your bank account, or if you prefer just to make a one-time gift, you can do that as well. You can do that at nhpr.org, or you can call and set it up at 1-888-805-6477.
We here at NHPR, we pay NPR about $344,000 each year to provide you those newscasts and the Morning Edition and All Things Considered, even the weekend shows like Weekend Edition. See, we're not expecting you to pay the entire $344,000. We just want you to do what you can afford. Maybe that's $10 a month or $15 a month as a sustainer plan. Whatever you can do, just doing your part will ensure that we can pay these bills and provide you the exchange and word of mouth and those stories that NHPR reporters work on. So nhpr.org or 1-888-805-6477.
And maybe your part can be $20 a month. If so, we'll send you this new thank you gift we have. It's the Blue Nano brand Bluetooth speaker. This speaker can be used with any Bluetooth-enabled device like your phone or maybe a tablet. It's easy to use. You just switch it on and your phone or your tablet is going to find it. The Blue Nano speaker has this big dynamic stereo sound that comes out of this thing that's a little bit bigger than the size of a golf ball. So you can leave your device in one room and take that speaker with you anywhere in the house you want. You can get it for a $20 sustaining contribution right now. Call 1-888-805-6477 or give online at nhpr.org.
And you're supporting public radio, that place where you get to hear balanced news and information, talking about the things that you're thinking about. Where else could you get that mix of international, national, and local news and talk? It's right here on New Hampshire Public Radio. We have a goal of $900 to go to support us right now. You can check out all of our thank you gifts online when you make a contribution there, which is nhpr.org. It's safe and secure, or give us a call at 1-888-805-6477. Thanks.
The Diane Rehm Show coming up on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from the law firm of Donahue, Tucker, and Chandela, offering legal representation to New Hampshire businesses, individuals, and municipalities with offices in Exeter, Portsmouth, and Meredith. And from the McAuliffe Shepherd Discovery Center, hosting weddings, birthdays, reunions, nonprofit and corporate events, days and evenings year-round. Information